Season 4, Episode 3, Decoded Podcast. Season 4, Episode 3, Decoded Podcast. I had to say that twice because I don't think we were live when I said it the first time, but that's okay. How are you doing, Chris?
Oh, if the on-ramp had ears.
Today's on-ramp would have been really good for any of the people that would spend their extra money to be part of our like Patreon type thing if we had one, because I think the on-ramp was we took our gloves off and we were just, it was raw and real, and I think people would have appreciated the things we were talking about, how it played out, because I think people could make connections to both of our perspectives based on our professional lives over the past couple of weeks at school and our personal lives at home. Mm-hmm. I think there could have been lots of connections made, but we will just have to, now that we're in the podcast, we'll have to just talk about those things if we choose to, in a different kind of way, to make sure that we are being professional.
Hmm.
And as authentic as you can be in a professional lens, right? Because I think there's a difference. Real deal talk, everybody does it, right? When the mics are off, the cameras are off, and you're talking to your buddy, you'll talk in a different way, especially if there's a connection and a trust. Mm-hmm. And then even when the mics aren't on or aren't off, you're going to talk to your supervisor or your teaching partner or your next door neighbor in a way that is, you basically look at your audience and you address them in an authentic way within reason, because, you know, you need trust, you need all kinds of layers there with someone. So as I was telling you, and I could say this here, that my world's kind of been upside down since we've gone back to school.
Mm-hmm.
But that you are still close enough to the core of who I am to be looped into what's happening with me, whereas everything else that's peripheral is just not, it means nothing to me right now. So right now, the most important things for me are making sure that my family's as good as they can be and that I'm going to mm-hmm. work and I'm doing my job as best as I can. Everything else is like total periphery and I have no interest in it at all. So if, you know, somebody at work casually says, have you spoken to Joe Blow or whatever about whatever, I'm like, nope, Joe Blow's not on my radar until I can get my feet under me with respect to my work and my family. So it has been an interesting mental shift, because my evenings look like this. I come home from work and I'm like relieved to not be at work anymore. So I'm happy to be home. But then my son has extracurricular stuff happening right now. So then it's off to wherever to do his extracurriculars. And then when I'm at home, it's like supporting the family as best as I can. And then helping my other son who just started high school, because this model of like some days you're at home all day and then some days you're at school in the morning and you come home for synchronous learning in the afternoon, it does not fit with how my son learns. So we're trying to figure out how to make that work. And what that looks like right now is, if I'm not with my other son doing extracurriculars, then I'm at home trying to help my other son with his learning and his assignments for school. And when I am out with my other son, then my wife is doing the high school work. But she had said to me yesterday that she had had enough and she couldn't come home from work and do it again. So I was on last night for the high school homework. And it's, you know, like I told you, I took my kids out for dinner. When we came home, I ate dinner. And then instead of having time to just relax, it was grab your Chromebook. Let's take a look at your newest assignment. Mm-hmm. And let me see how I can support you in doing the work, in understanding whatever it is that you're working on. So everything else is like, it means nothing to me. It's just like, don't even bring it up if you like, but it means nothing. I'm not giving it any energy. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of like where I'm at right now. I'm hoping it doesn't turn into this for like an extended period of time. But I guess if it does, then that's just the way it is. And that's where the universe needs me to be.
It's your story. It connects with what's going on in my house too. In the on-ramp, I mentioned the whole kind of barometric pressure element of right now. Like, you just have a sense of some disturbance in the force all around you. And it's kind of ambiguous. It's anxiety inducing. It seems to feel like there's another problem pops up before you can succinctly deal with the solution of another problem. And what I'm kind of noticing is that there's just too many little problems to kind of make it back to some of the beginning problems. So they're just falling off the table. And part of it is because as educators, we're trying to fix a thing that maybe like we don't have access to the toolkit that actually needs to, like, it's almost like we're trying to do the most specific, direct, simple things to fix a systemic shift that we don't have any direct access to change. So I don't know, it'd kind of be like thinking, you know, your brakes aren't working on your car. So you think to yourself, well, I'm going to go up to premium gas. I'm going to pay more and put better gas in it. Like, somehow that type of we don't have access to the right tools to sort of like repair the vehicle. We actually need to give it back to a specialist to be able to fix it. And unfortunately, in a lot of ways, the specialists are the Ministry of Education and the individuals that kind of set these plans in motion. Like, we're entirely on the other end of kind of codifying and streamlining and strategizing with the implications of what someone else has sort of suggested upriver. But we can never get back up there to kind of say, like, just stop giving us these suggestions. And I think, you know, it's been mentioned many times on socials, and it's been mentioned many times in some of the face-to-face conversations I've had at the school, is that it's sort of beyond the battle fatigue. You're on that other side, just kind of like I think you and I talked about this before, like the flat effect, like your emotional state feels like it's been kind of ripped out of you and is entirely being shaken by the system. And then it just gets put back inside of you. And then you kind of drive home, and then you hang with your family. And then, you know what I mean? Like, it's like it feels like a dislocation. That's what it is. It's a dislocation. Because I will tell you, I am so easily triggered by, I'm less triggered by another change in the system than I am like with one of my kids leaving their books on the stairs. And I don't like that I'm in that space. So yeah, that's kind of like, that's a little bit of the mindset. And also feeling like I don't have easy access to spaces where I do want to talk about some of the kind of cool, good stuff that I have going on, because it could feel like someone would, like, I don't know if that would land in a receptive space, because sometimes it's hard to measure where other people, now I'm talking about this almost entirely, like, all my friends are teachers and educators. I do have friends that are not, and you really can tell the difference in sort of connecting to them, because the types of conversations that you get drawn into are, they land on education, but only because they're parents, not because they're on the inside and having to sort of deal with all the changes, right? But I do appreciate those, because I feel like it's almost in those spaces I can talk about something that went well in class or went well in the school day, and they can genuinely appreciate that how good that feels to me to have that kind of a win. But it's a little more difficult to find the spaces in school to talk about that kind of stuff, to be able to talk about the good stuff. because I feel like we're in a moment of just having one long bad day. Like in the general sense, there's good stuff happening, but one long bad day.
I have to give a shout out to Carlos Roque, who works in my school board, and he and I consider him a friend, and we've done committee work together and other work around STEAM and tech integration and stuff over the years. And the shout out is to Carlos for the real deal talk he's been putting out on Twitter yesterday and yesterday primarily. Like he's been explaining how he's been operating at school under these new COVID guidelines, and he's being true. Like he's being true and authentic, and some of the things he has said have really resonated with me at a deep level. So let me give you an example. So Carlos is at a school that I would say, it's known for how difficult it can be there because of the neighborhood it's in and the school profile, just the way it's made up and where it is. They have needs. And I know every school has needs, but that school in particular is, in my opinion, a needy school. And I've worked there, so I understand. When he talks about his school, I understand, because even though I worked there many years ago, everything he says, kind of, it was still like that years ago. And Carlos is talking about the way he'd normally operate and the way he's been operating. And he had a picture. He was wearing his mask, his face shield, and he had one of those plexiglass shields that the school has several of them. And he was talking about doing guided reading and guided math and how he's got three barriers in front of him. And then on the other side is the kid with their mask. And he was saying, like, I can't hear them. So I'm trying to work with these kids. I'm trying to support them, but I can't hear them. And, you know, I made a comment about, like, when I put my face shield on, and I've been having a hard time hearing my students as well for a number of different reasons. One of them being they just talk low. The other one is that the majority of my class are ELL learners, and I think some of their confidence isn't there yet. So when they speak to me in English, they're not confident, so they turn down the volume a little bit more. And they're in grade 3, so their volume is already turned down a little bit more. And here you have the old man trying to like, I'm like, pardon me, I'm sorry, can you please repeat yourself? And constantly saying, don't worry, it's not what you're saying, it's I can't get it into my head. Like, so they'll ask a question, then I'll say, I'm sorry, I didn't hear you. And they think that I'm being difficult. Like they think that I didn't like what they said, so I want them to repeat it to make a point. And I'm like, no, I didn't hear what you said, so I need you to say it again. I've been finding difficulty there. So Carlos has been tweeting out the difficulties that he's encountering as he's doing his everyday work. And he's talking about how in a school where he needs to support learners with needs, he's having a hard time adjusting, because normally at his guided reading table, he'd have 6 to 8 kids. And now he's only got one behind all these barriers. And he's like, what do I do? And I felt the need to respond to his tweet and tell him, listen, same thing's happening to me. I'm literally walking around from kid to kid all day long because I don't want them up and about. If I can keep them, at their desk, then that's where I'm going to keep them. And I will come to them. But it takes its toll on you because, like I said, because I have a chair and I carry the chair with me and I put the chair down between two kids. So I can literally work with two kids at one time, but the face shield's on. So every time I talk, it reverberates into my ears. So now I'm hearing myself in stereo, which really sucks. And I'm trying, and I have to be a little bit louder because I've got my mask on, I've got the shield on, and I need the child to hear me. And I'm trying not to touch their papers because I'm just trying. Like, I'm doing everything I can. I'm giving them feedback. In some cases, I'm literally, like, directing them. And in other cases, I'm giving them some tips and ideas, and then I turn to the other child. Now, while I'm doing that, there's a kid off in the other corner with his hand up yelling my name. And it's like, I can't come to you right now. So, I mean, it looks different. We have to behave differently. Everything is slower than it was before. And hey, the start of the school year is generally slower. The tempo's low, right? Because you're trying to establish everything. You're trying to establish rules, routines, expectations, rapport and relationship. Like, that's killing me that as I'm running from one child to the other, I'm thinking, okay, like, don't leave the child in a way that they're going to feel like you don't care or you don't want to help, or, you know, God forbid they see that I'm frustrated, you know? And then in the middle of all that, you'll have students doing exactly what they're not supposed to be doing, right? So you'll have a kid walking around touching everything. The mask is down. They're in people's faces trying to look for something. And it's like, you can't do that. Stop touching everything, please. Go back to your desk. It's just different. And I don't know about other people. I know Carlos, it's starting to take its toll on him. I don't think in a way that's like going to cause him to leave teaching, but in a way that he can feel it and he doesn't feel effective. These are my words. I don't feel as effective as I've been in the past. And I had a great moment yesterday. I was able to scrounge up enough computers. That's the other thing too. Like I said to my students, raise your hand if you borrowed a computer from the school when we did remote learning last year. So like literally, you know, 6 or 7 kids out of 20 raised their hand. I'm like, bring the computers to school. And they're like, really? I'm like, bring them every day, because when you bring them, I can start to take you into the digital world where we can do things, where it's a little bit easier for me to provide you with feedback, because I can type something out or I can give you verbal feedback. Like, there are tricks of the trade there that work for me that will allow me to be more effective, in my opinion. So these kids brought their computers, and I was able to scrounge some computers because the school has not given me my allotment of Chromebooks yet. So they're living in the library, and the library tech is doing what she needs to do, and she's got her list of priorities, right? So it's like they're there, but I can't have them yet. So yesterday, a bunch of my students finally brought their devices, and then I was able to get devices out to kids that I was able to scrounge. And it was a moment where almost everybody was able to have a device at one point or another. And I was able to get them to log into their accounts. I was able to direct them to Google Classroom where they could see our digital space. And I was able to get them to engage with a short but kind of fun activity so that they could kind of get into, like, this is how Classroom works, and just kind of revisit it again, because many of them are familiar. I'm not, because I've never used it before. So I'm learning it as well. And then when we went out for recess, a few of the kids who've been very silent all week and very new to the country, you know, they said to me, you know, that was a lot of fun, Mr. C. We're really happy you did that. Thanks for doing that. And I felt this moment of relief as, okay, well, I'm glad that you were doing something that you felt was valuable to you. So I appreciate the feedback. And then I think, you know, I hope I can continue to do things that bring value to them. And then there was this one other interesting story is that as I'm learning about how I can let my students use my classroom library, there's been times, transition times where kids don't have anything to do. And it's like, part of that's on me, but part of it's not on me, because I'm learning to operate differently. So how can you go from one paper activity to another paper activity and not be kind of bored? So I'm trying to fill those transition spaces, but there was a moment, it was like work, snack, recess. And the one student looked at me and said, I put my work away. I'm done my work. And I ate my snack. And I said, okay, well, go ahead and take this out of your desk and keep working on it. And the student said, I don't want to do that. And I said, how come? And the student was like, that's not what I'm interested in at this moment. And I responded with like, well, what are you interested in? Because like, I don't know what else, I'm limited, you know? So she's like, well, can I go grab some of those manipulatives? I'm like, well, no, because once you dig into those manipulatives, then they can't be used with anybody else until I clean them. And it was just a moment of, she's looking at me like, this is boring. And I'm looking at her like, I get it. But there are certain things we can't be doing right now that normally we'd be like, normally I'd have a carpet. Normally I'd have six kids with me at my guided reading table doing guided mathematics or guided writing or guided reading and being able to support them in a way that we're in each other's face and I'm writing on stuff and I'm writing in my assessment binder and it's like really good stuff. But that's not what it looks like anymore. And I'm not stuck on what it used to look like. I'm stuck on, I don't know what to do now. Mm-hmm. So I'm learning what to do and I'm learning how to make it effective. And I just don't feel it. I don't feel it. So big shout out to Carlos for tweeting it out because he's not the only one. I think many of us are feeling it and then many of us aren't. Like some people say the world is peachy. Everything's great. I'm not living in that world right now. So I'm really happy for those people. I don't take anything away from them. But my question to them is, well, what are you doing to fill these gaps that now exist? Because I'd love to know, because nobody's telling me, so I need to seek it out. What are you doing? How is this working in your room? I'd love to know. And I'm waiting to hear back from those people.
Waiting for the response, yeah. I don't know. There's a small collection of the new school that I'm at. I'm sort of arriving here and trying to figure out all the different cultures that kind of exist there, and many of them existed there for, you know, long before I arrived. It's a school that has had people have been able to stay in that school, and you grow and you connect, and so I get to observe all the different connections and cliques and the culture of the school. It's really fascinating. I've said to people a few times that I appreciate being able to be a tourist in this space, in so much as that I feel like I have a little bit of more freedom to just go and meet and connect and look for sources of like what you're talking about, Carlos. Like I can go, I don't have to feel that my crew is just my department. And I'm meeting a lot of different people in the school, and it's kind of cool. It's helping to kind of keep my I'll say eye on the ball to a degree. And what I mean by that is just I'm able to focus on kind of getting to my work in a way that I think if I it would be different kind of support, but it would be different type of support if I was still currently at a school that I'd been at for a few years. But I'm really appreciating some of that freedom to be able to go and kind of meet as many different people as possible and talk about planning and talk about strategizing and talking about fixing. It feels like a whole lot of fixing. I have encountered a few people that they're just not in that space. Their conversation isn't as productive with some people that I've encountered, in that they're still in some ways struggling with the shift that happened back on March 13th. Like they haven't sort of moved through their own process of trying to figure out. So I appreciate deeply some of the new peeps that I've met that are able to kind of not only speak to their reality, but then kind of shift to, so here's what I'm going to do about it. Not just, this is how it's kind of affected me, which is a part of the whole story. And that's, like I said, everyone's in a different space because of that. But I do. I appreciate the other individuals that are able to transition to kind of like exactly what's right in front of us, the challenges that are right in front of us, and be able to speak to that too. And I find myself kind of like gravitating towards those individuals right now. Not that I'm avoiding any conversation per se, but I find right now I really am craving to talk to people that can deal through the reality by making it less abstract and just speak specifically to what they're doing. Just speak, this is what I'm doing, this is why I'm doing it. And when new information comes along, I'll switch it up. So.
Do you feel, like, how are you feeling about being at a new school? Do you know a lot of people there? Like, I don't understand. I would like to hear from you. Like, I can't imagine. I know some people. I can't imagine having left my school during the postings in the spring and having to do this in a place where I don't really have relationship and understanding of the culture of the building. Now, unless there's, I have to say, unless things were so bad, you know, at school that I was like, oh, I'm leaving. I don't care if there's COVID or not. I'm not staying. I fortunately don't have that. I'm not in that position, but I can't even believe. Like, how does that feel? How are you doing?
It's, I'm still in contact with some of the people back there. So it's interesting. Made some tight connections in a couple different departments. So we message back and forth. And I know, because I have a habit of exploring other schools. Like, I enjoy going to a new school and, again, learning the new culture. It's a bit of the traveler in me. It's something that very, you know, if I were, I wander both mentally and sometimes just physically. Like, I like to just go see new places. And I think when I first started teaching, I probably stayed at that school too long. I was at my first school for 10, 11 years. And, you know, while I was at that school, I shifted and I worked in a bunch of different departments. I was in the tech department. I did alternative education, spec ed. I did guidance. So I was in student success as well. So I had a bunch of different portfolios, some of the learning opportunities at that school. I think if I hadn't had access to different opportunities, I would have left sooner, because my mind would start to wander. And I'm like, well, I wonder what else is going on out there. I think also my thoughts to shift coincided also with developing a digital PLN, because then I really started to have conversations about what was going on out there in education and not just what was going on in front of me. And that, I think, was a bit of a game changer, which kind of led me to take the opportunity where I went and I did access and then shifted from there into a different school and did ASD programming, and now I'm at another school doing math and spec ed. The problem that I, it's not the problem, but I guess the difficulty is both a benefit. It's a benefit and a problem at the same time, that I leave well. Like, I kind of have a sense of, I get a sense of urgency when it's time for me to shift to a new project. Like, I just crave that new challenge. And it, as it so happened, that me craving a new challenge or a new project has also kind of coincided with different opportunities in the board to kind of transfer to a new school. I don't find many people hold the same mindset as me. I'd love to meet some people that are like that. Like, I feel like I can be effective and transient at the same time in the school system, because I kind of bring a lot of my teaching tools with me. And I go at it intensely while I'm there. So landing in this new school has felt like just a natural shift in a career that's already been, you know, bookmarked with change. Like, I really do. I shift and I go looking for new schools and people to meet. What's interesting about this particular shift, though, is it feels like it has changed kind of quite fundamentally how we do school, that so many people, even if they've stayed at their school, are being forced to do things in new ways, almost as if they have shifted schools. Like, I would wonder if even the schools that people are in right now, if they feel slightly estranged from what they were used to from last year. And I don't know if I mentioned to you, but I mentioned maybe to Ramona, somebody, I was saying, like, I figure every teacher this year feels like an alt ed teacher. And often being an alt ed teacher, you don't know your students till just up before, you know, a couple of days before school starts. You don't necessarily know what you're teaching because the students arrive and the courses that they need, you find out. You could have, you know, the cap in alt ed spaces is 16. So you could have 16 different kids working on 16 different courses in 16 differentiated ways, on top of the support that you might, if you're working through ELL programming or exceptional special education support, like all these different layers just kind of get turned on in an instant, and you have to run with your skills. And then you work to develop the curriculum once you know the kids. And I feel like that's something that, you know, if there's any alt ed teachers that listen to this, that they may feel a certain connection to what this school year feels like. And if there's a disconnection, I would say this is a little bit, you know, to any teachers that are kind of new to this space right now, this is a little bit like how alt ed programs have always operated. It just doesn't get talked about that much outside of alt ed, really. But yeah, this is very much like an all personalized alternative education year. And there's quite a bit of dynamic change and sometimes revolving enrollment. So a whole lot of things that are alt ed are kind of happening system wide. And where I kind of somewhere in this rant, not a rant, somewhere in this TED talk, I mentioned the estrangement factor. And this can be quite decentering. Because I don't know if there's too many people that are doing exactly what they want to do in the way that they want to do it. For me, I've transitioned to the hybrid or adaptive model that my school board has asked us to do. I'm starting with the virtual because I have this semester, I have a period of resourcing. So I'm chasing kids, connecting with kids, starting IEP process. And then my other two periods, I have grade 9 learning strategies with math. And I've started to do that online, trying to figure out what that looks like online. So I've transitioned fine into that. I don't know any better necessarily how I'm going to make what I'm doing digitally transition into the classroom when I have them. And I won't see them until October. I won't actually see them in school in October because of our rotation schedule. So I'm doing well, I'm healthy, and I'm eager to keep doing stuff. I think I was positioned, as far as my career so far, I was kind of positioned and, it's not skilled, but kind of positioned, and my particular skill set and how I've come through education, the change didn't rattle me too much. And to the final thing, I think you asked, I know people, like, it's only because I've at some point, one, because I've shifted schools, two, because I've reached out and connected with people through socials, my podcast, the Chasing Squirrels, connected with a lot of different people in my school board. So I feel like I do have familiars in different schools. So going to this school that I'm at now, I did know people, and some of the people I haven't seen in 10 years, in real life, but I know a few people there. So I felt like I wasn't necessarily entirely arriving without some crew that I could connect with.
Well, that's cool. I'm happy
for that. It is fortunate. It's very fortunate how it sort of how it came together for me to be able to make a transition in this particular between these two school years.
You got me thinking. Something you said there got me thinking about what happens when the students are allowed or parents are allowed to decide if they want to move their kids out of the classroom into the remote learning or from remote back into the classroom, this will be an interesting experience, I guess.
We see what's happening. What was it, in Peel Board? I think it's in Peel. Maybe not. There are some boards that had kind of a late declaration date. And I think that kind of is really shaking their staffing. So they're having to move, you know, not really realizing, not sort of foreseeing the volume of individuals that would want to shift to virtual. And I don't know if Peel is, I think it might've been Peel, but it was one of the boards that, you know, there's some struggles to get enough teachers into virtual.
That's happening here.
Is it happening there too?
Oh, I know, yeah.
They said in my board, in York Region, there was at some point when we had to decide, and I think our sort of pre-final deciding time was before school started. And they said, you know, once you get into this, there isn't necessarily an assurance of when you're going to be able to transition between at least a half semester and then maybe a full semester. Like they were sort of putting out possible change times. And then they just released that there's another deadline on the 21st. So stuff is kind of happening. It's like the implications of the permutations on the decision to sort of offer the virtual against what's happening with the actual numbers is creating a whole lot of messes, I think, in boards.
This last week there was more reorganization and teachers' classes being dismantled in order to free up teachers to go do the online teaching. So my wife's school was part of that just the other day, actually. My school wasn't, but it'll be interesting, to say the least, to see what happens when the first opportunity arises, I guess, which is coming up relatively soon, like in the next 3 weeks, in my board at least, like when the parents are given the option again. Well, we're going to ask them what their intentions are, and they're going to let us know what they want to do, if they want to stay as is or if they want to make a move, and then what that looks like in the classrooms. Like I'm looking at my classroom and I'm thinking there's room for more desks, but it's going to get real tight. And I know there's already classrooms that are really tight. So I'm fortunate that my room is, I can still move around my room. The kids can still move around the room, but you just don't know what's going to happen. So we'll see. It's like a moving target. You're trying to get the bullseye, because then that equals success. But I think success for me right now looks like me still shooting at the bullseye, that's at the target that's moving. I think if I stop shooting, I'm going to have a problem. So as long as I'm firing away, trying to hit the target, then I'm okay. But it's really tricky. And then, you know, I made a comment today, one of Andrew Campbell's tweets, and I don't remember his exact tweet, but my response was that, I think the issue was parents now seeing what the remote learning looks like and how basically you're on all day, like from 9 to 3 with breaks in between and stuff. You are synchronous. And, you know, he was saying like some parents, this is causing havoc for some parents, because if your kid's a primary student, you can't really do your homework if you're always by your kid's side. And my response, my tweet was around, no matter what you do, no matter how you cut it, doing your learning from home is never going to be the same as doing your learning at school. There's just too many layers and variables that are, you can't cover at home. Like when you drop a child off at school, they're in a whole new environment. They're under the guidance of a handful of adults They see their friends. There's the breaks during the day. There's the culture of the building, right? There's the physical spacing and environment that they're dealing with that's different from home. Like, all those things, you don't have that at home, right? Like, when I was teaching from home, mind you, it was different than what they're doing now. They have more of a standard now that people are following. But when I was teaching at home, I could get up and go make a sandwich and come back and continue working and eating. I could go use the bathroom without having to wait for a bell or to beg, an adult like in the hallway to come and watch my kid so I can go to the bathroom for an emergency. Like, that doesn't happen. But now that I'm in the building, I have to abide and I have to like realize that my day is dictated by the culture of that building and how school works in that building. There's no way to replicate that. And don't get me wrong, like I'm not saying that the remote learning's wrong. I'm just saying I feel bad for those parents that are trying to work from home. And they thought that this remote learning would look one way, but it looks completely different than what they thought it was going to be. Their kid is in school all day. There's a screen in front of you, and there's going to be a teacher that's going to come on and do a 30-minute lesson or whatever, be online to do small group work with certain kids at certain times while other kids are doing other things. Like, it's all day long. It's not the way it was before. And that's tough. And the kid is living, it's totally different to be sitting in your parents' office doing your school rather than being in a classroom with 19 other kids and a teacher who does all kinds of things all day. And then you've got your recesses and your lunches and your walk to the bathroom and the water refill station. Like, there's a whole, the morning announcements, like, you just can't replicate that. So that was the point I wanted to make. And I appreciate that the option's there because some parents are really worried about sending their kid to school. And I have no issue with that. No issue. So I'm glad that there's an option for them to learn. It's not perfect, but hey, at school, it's not perfect either. And I'm proof of that. And so is Carlos, but are we all still trying, Chris? Are we all still taking care of each other? Because remember when this started? When this started, it was like, whatever you do is okay, just move in the right direction. Are we still like that? Or has it moved to, you've been doing this for months, and this is what we expect from you now?
Yeah, we're in post-compassion education now. I think we're officially in post-compassion. And not, I think... And I mean, it's not to make it seem as if people aren't caring, but there is an element of an expectation to sort of kind of pull up your britches and get to work and not to stay like we're kind of the post-compassion tough love. I think people are now in the space where they're kind of armoring up to be able to get through their day in more ways than one. I mean, the PPE in some ways is an obvious indicator that we are putting more protections on ourselves and putting barriers between us and each other. So, you know, there's something to that actual physical armament that reminds us that we no longer have the same facility to sort of connect in a compassionate, open fashion because there's things that we're sort of telling each other we're closed off to. I think you mentioned last week the whole, you know, kids coming up to your desk and you kind of just looking up and seeing them staring at you. And the reaction in any other time would be, you know, okay, I can talk to you, but all three people might stay there. Like they would just stay in that space. The sort of mental intervention we have, though, is like, I am not even able to think about supporting you standing in front of me because you're standing too close, you pulled off your mask, and there's too many of you close to each other. So there's some real barriers that are making it difficult, I think, to access what are our normal tools of relationship building. There's a whole lot of work going on right now to try and sort of work through that and to build rapport. I'm not saying that's not happening, but on a real human level, tools have been taken away from us that we only realize they're gone in moments of anxiety. We only realize sort of like the ease and facility of making connection because someone's standing too close to us. It's like we're standing in our own experiment. And calling it the post-compassion phase, again, it's not that we're not still trying to make connection in these spaces. But I think that there are elements of the institution of education that are not operating with compassion and humanity at the center. So, and the business of education is entirely kind of being wagged by the minister, because there are so many people indicating that they're sort of suffering and this is not good for their kids and they're having a hard time managing it. And the typical, what seems to be the typical response is talking about the protective layers. Not even, and that's the whole political nature of responding to people's pleas, is that you sort of answer beside it, you accelerate and you pass. So that very much is I'm aware of. And there have been a couple times where I've heard individuals in our board sort of talking about how their head's shaking about why our board is doing something. And in a lot of ways, I think every board is kind of doing the same thing. Like they're trying to sort of do protective layers. That's what everything seems. It's another protective layer, another protective layer. My personal inquiry this year is I'm trying to see how does growth exist in such a protective layer environment, and what is growing in that protective state. That's really what's happening kind of in the post-compassion, where I feel the risk of losing touch with losing touch with our connection to each other, and losing touch with our sense of growth.
I hear you, and I appreciate your position on the post-compassion education. I think I see the compassion every day in my mm-hmm. building, right? Like at the micro level, it's there. And it has to be, because I think if it's not, you will see a lot of people just walk away. But honestly, like you're going to see people walk away. They're going to be like, I'm just not doing this anymore.
That's happening. I mean, retirements.
Yes.
Retirements,
but like, let's ignore, for example, retirements and resignations. Let's just look at mental health. People just can't handle it anymore. Mm-hmm. And they're like, I'm done. I can't come back. Mm-hmm. I'm not in a good state, right? Like, let's just look at that alone. So I think, you know, the people in the classrooms, in the schools doing the work, I think I see compassion there. And I'm not saying that in response to you saying we're post compassion. I get what you're saying. We're way past the business of education. Those wheels are spinning again, right? Mm-hmm. Like mm-hmm. the government's pushing it. Parents are tired. They want education for their kids. But when you boil it all down, like even people on socials are talking trash about the virtual learning model, and I haven't heard from my kid's teacher yet. Where's my kid's teacher? And like, as a teacher in the system, I'm seeing classes like just down the street, a class is being dismantled. Mm-hmm. A teacher is being told, you're not going to be working in this building anymore with a class in front of you. We need you to go. We don't need you. You're going remote. Like
the involuntary redeployment.
This is where you're going. This mm-hmm. is where you're needed. What grade am I teaching? I don't know. How many kids are in my class? I don't know. You'll find out when you find out. And so then parents are like, what's going on? And as a teacher, I want to say to them, we don't know what's going on. So how can we tell you what's happening when we don't know? And it's not because anybody's being difficult. It's because we don't have the information fast enough.
Yeah.
Everything about this startup for me as a regular classroom teacher has been different. And on top of that, our school board has adopted a new operating system for like attendance and things like that. And they're still working through the kinks. So it's like, I've seriously, like, early on, and I'm so proud of myself for doing this. Early on, I just let go of it. I'm like, well, if my attendance doesn't work, then I'll just call the office and let them know what's happening in my room. You know, because I could complain all day long. I could complain all day long. It's not going to get me anywhere. I'm not going to ignore the truths in front of me. That's not happening. I'm not going to stick my head in the sand and pretend that everything's hunky-dory. It's not. But I'm also not going to live in the negative. I'm going to look for the positive. But I tell you, when I get in my car at the end of the day, I'm happy to be leaving work. I'm so happy because it's a day. It's a full day. It's stress all day for me. And when I'm driving to work, I'm going. And my hope is that I'm going to have a great day and that my kids are going to learn and my kids are going to achieve and it's going to be good. But once I get out of my car and put my mask on, I feel the stress and the anxiety. And then especially I walk into my room and everything I had planned is going out the window because this is now happening and it's become a priority. And now this is happening and it's a priority. So the things on my list get deeper on the list because they're not a priority anymore. But when I leave the building, they become a priority again until I get back to the building the next day. So it's like, for the people who can just go and do it, man, I give you two thumbs up. I don't operate like that. Mm-hmm. And I refuse to pretend. I'm just not going to do it. I'm going to be me. And having said all that, I'm still planning on getting up Monday morning and going to work.
Yeah.
Like, so I'm not saying all this and I'm like, I'm not going anymore. I'm still planning on going. And when the bell rings and I see my kids, I still welcome them and I still treat them with respect and dignity. And I still do the best I can to teach them the lessons I prepared. And it's not going the way I'd like, but I'm still doing it. That doesn't mean that I stick my head in the sand and pretend like it's great. You know what's been making my day actually? And my friend Joe Marquez, he works for Q, Computer Using Educators in California. And Joe, I don't remember his actual title, but he's basically in charge of innovation with Q. And he's always cooking up these amazing initiatives and stuff. And one of his initiatives has to do with educators providing tips or suggestions on how to get through the day at work. Like, what are you doing that's helping you get through the day, that's helping you feel good? And he's doing a Flipgrid thing. And I hadn't done it, but the other day Joe was talking to me about it. And, you know, he was saying, like, not many people have jumped in and done this. It's like a tip of the day for Instagram or something. And I'm like, I'm going to do it because I was sitting at my desk at lunch and I felt good about, like, that moment. And my tip was find someone that you can talk to every day. Yep. That's just going to listen every day. Like, and I've got that at work. I've got a buddy named Mike. He works there. And every day, Mike and I have intentionally left the building to go to the church next door. The church has this great patio outside space. And the priest has allowed us to go and sit in that space. It's there's a bunch of Adirondack chairs that our principal bought and they're spaced and it's just, you're outside. You're not in the building anymore. You can take your mask off because you're far enough away from the other people that are there and you can just be there for the moment. And Mike and I have been going every day. So the bell will ring. I'll go to Mike's class. Mike, do you want to go today? Yeah, let's go. We grab our stuff, we go, and we're out there for, you know, 20 minutes, and it's a great reset, and we just talk. I'm just like, how was your morning? And he'll tell me, I tried to do this, and it didn't work, and now I got to regroup, and da-da-da-da-da. And it's just like, here's my tip to any of you out there. Find the one person, right? Find the person and just connect every day. Mm-hmm. Good day, bad day, ugly day. Who cares what the day is? Make sure you build it into your day, because you got to get it out of you. And your partner, your buddy might want to get something out of them too. And just do it, because it helps. Me just saying it helps, because then it's not living up here anymore. And like I told you, when I get home, I've got other layers that become the priority. And then work is not number one anymore. It's like number four. It has to be on the list, because yeah. I do it every day. But that's it.
Because you're back to dad. Back to dad.
Well, dad, husband, mm-hmm. driver, like mental health coach. Like you're everything. You have to be, so that the people at the house can survive too. So on that note,
I think let's do the super secret code word, Joe Marquez.
That's awesome. I have to say as well. So Joe Marquez, I'll put that, that's funny. Joe, I talk to Joe every day too, but I do it digitally. So I've got my in real world person, that's Mike. And then I've got my digital buddy, that's Joe. So mm-hmm. Joe hears from me every day. And it's just, it's a back and forth, you know. I hear from Joe, he hears from me. And it's, I call it walk and talk with Joe Marquez, because I usually do it when I'm walking in the morning. Mm-hmm. And it's funny, because Schreffler is our, you know, Brad to the future. But for Joe, I'm the future, because I'm always talking to him 3 hours earlier, because he's in California. But I mean, it's like, make a connection with somebody and just make that a priority in your day.
Yeah.
Just to get things off your chest. If you're so inclined, that's my suggestion. I'm sure there's a ton of other suggestions that would be really good for different people and the way they operate.
It's true. No, it's a great suggestion, dude.
Well, I hope you enjoy this weekend. Mm-hmm. And I wish you well in this week of work that's coming up.
Yeah, for sure, man. For sure. I'll definitely connect with you this week.
Right on, Chris. Peace out. Catch you later.